Hello, 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 drama listeners, and welcome to a brand new episode of your all-time favorite podcast in the entire world, Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell. Before we get into today's amazing episode with special guest Sydney James Harcourt, who you know and love, is the star of Hamilton, is the star of the original Broadway company of The Girl from the North Country, as the star of Cats, the Jellicle Ball. Yeah, I know, you're gagged. You're going to learn all about him and more in a second, but before we get into that, I need to tell you about our Patreon, Drama Plus, where for $5 a month at patreon.com/thedramapodcast, you can support, once again, your favorite podcast in the entire world and make Dylan and I the happiest twins in the whole world, because we're going to give you bonus episodes. We're going to give you access to our close friends on Instagram. And we also are going to give you our undying love and support for supporting us in this way. So again, $5 a month, patreon.com/thedramapodcast to become a member of Drama Plus. All right, thank you again. We know you're going to love this episode. Thank you for always supporting us. Tell your friends and enjoy the show.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to taste in.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nominated?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more.
Drama.
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 Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, happy 2025. January. I feel like this is the third January in a row where there is just this TV show that I cannot get enough of. And I know you can't get enough of. And at the time of recording, we've got a few episodes that have already dropped, and it's The Traitors on Peacock.
I know.
Are you obsessed?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking, like, what will Connor and I chat about today? It's the only thing on my mind. Of course I'm obsessed. It is the best. Obviously, the U.S. version, they finally figured out that we really just want to see celebrities on there. But I have to say, what I'm even more excited for, and I've seen some tweets just because it's in the algorithm, about the U.K. one, which is, to me, always just so much more thrilling.
It's already airing, the civilian version?
The civilian U.K. version airs. But I did actually hear they're doing a U.K. celebrity one, or they're at least going to be filming one.
Oh, my God. But it's so good.
I know. I think once the American one finishes airing, then they'll air the UK one. But anyways,
that's what they did last year.
Without any spoilers, because when this comes out, I feel like we'll be like halfway through the season already. But who are you most looking forward to on this season of The Traitors?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, if I'm pretending no one's watched the season yet, I would say I'm definitely most excited for The Housewives. I don't watch Survivor. I know it's a world that I would absolutely love once I immerse myself in it. Obviously, I love the Survivor alums who have been on Traitors.
Right.
Like Parvati, obviously, Sandra, duh. But it's the Housewives. It's Dorinda. It's Dolores. I'm intrigued by Robin Dixon's presence on the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love that she's there. Allegedly, Candace was supposed to do it from Potomac, but she was pregnant at the time of filming. So she, and also Lindsay Hubbard from Summer House was pregnant at the time of filming. So she couldn't do it. So they subbed in like Robin and Sierra for Summer House.
Yeah.
But Dorinda was born to be at a round table. So yeah, that's all I'll say.
She's
there.
Just the best.
And I love Dolores. So I know you don't know Dolores from Jersey, but she's the mother I never had, the sister I always wanted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know?
Right. Well, I'm most excited about Bob the drag queen.
Ooh,
I think that
yes.
Bob is going to be iconic as always and just so interesting and won't be afraid to go there, like you were saying about some of the Survivor contestants. I'm excited to get to know them, but I wish we had a few more like other types of celebrities on there that aren't just like from game shows.
Yeah,
but you know, having Bob on there is a good start. I will say I also love how queer this season is so far. In the past they might have like one token queer person on the show, but
that's so true.
Peppermint's impact.
I know.
Season two.
Listen, well, you're right, because it's like they have like six Bravo people, a couple Bachelor people, and then the Survivor folks, and then just like some randos. I feel like because they do so many Survivors, so many Bravo, it's easy for those groupings to be targeted and then picked apart. So I would love for them to be a little bit more just random, I guess, for lack of a better word, with who they choose.
I think as the show goes on and they sort of run out of certain areas to choose from, maybe they will.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
I mean, the possibilities are endless. It's one of those shows where you could bring people back for another season, like they did with Kate Chastain last year, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But Alan Cumming is just incredible as the host.
Oh, the best. The best.
At the end of the premiere, Alan does recite some Shakespeare, which is so camp. It's just
It
beyond.
works so well. I know. I'm excited to see
Oh
where the
my
season
God.
goes.
Dylan, I'm also excited about this episode we have today with our guest. Would you do the honors
Oh
of
my
reading them
God.
in?
Absolutely. Our guest today gets tens, tens, tens across the board. This Grammy award-winning artist recently took on the role of Rum Tum Tugger to great acclaim in the reimagined feline phenomenon Cats, the Jellicle Ball. You will recognize him as an original Broadway cast member of Hamilton on stage and in the filmed version for Disney Plus. He was even the first Aaron Burr replacement on Broadway. Incredible. Audiences will recognize our amazing guest from Broadway appearances in American Idiot, The Lion King, Bells Are Ringing, and at Lincoln Center in Camelot. He was nominated for a Drama Desk Award for his portrayal of Joe Scott in The Girl from the North Country at the Public Theater. Television and film appearances include Netflix's Castlevania Nocturne, Blue Bloods, NCIS, Elementary, Younger, Tell Me a Story, The Good Wife, Law and Order, and Disney's Enchanted. As a vocalist, he has appeared in the most iconic stages, including Radio City Music Hall, Avery Fisher Hall, and Carnegie Hall. He is a trailblazing advocate, multi-hyphenate, and star. Please welcome to drama, Sydney James Harcourt.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to drama. Sydney, are you well?
I am so well. I am enjoying a break from the madness out in my enclave in northern Michigan, and it's snowing, and the cat, Momo, is asleep, and it's like a storybook out here, so I am great.
Oh, how nice.
It sounds dreamy. Did you have a nice holiday season?
I did. I'm what they call an extroverted introvert, I believe. I think that's the term Instagram has taught me. And so, honestly, like, too much people time and too much like hosting and too much like feeling like I need to like kind of be entertainment director. But it was good in the sense that I'm well and, you know, surrounded by family. So
yeah,
that's good.
I totally relate to the extroverted introvert thing. I feel like I'm like a 55-45 split where I like love being out and about, being social, being with people. But thank goodness I live alone, so I can just totally reset at the end of a long work day. Or, you know, if I want to leave the party early, I can come back and just know I have my like sanctuary to recharge. I'll even like disappear at a party and just like hang out in the bathroom for a minute just so I can like,
oh my God,
you know?
Me too. Like, you know, it was a crazy thing for me to love to sing because you have to do that in front of people in order to, you know, make a living out of it. Oh, and my stage fright was just insane, like shaking, legs shaking, not being able to hold things. Like it just was really crazy. And I'm the same, like many people know. I do love to go out. I do love a good club night. But sometimes I just need to walk outside and find like a tiny nook in the corner of that, you know, back alleyway of the Eagle. Or, you know, I want to be on the dance floor, like dancing down, but I'm not necessarily looking to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Time and place for everything, for sure.
Wait, I love the Eagle rooftop.
No, just watching how they've expanded that place over the years has been really awesome.
Really is. Yeah. Wait, I heard that too. I haven't been back in a few months, but I think like on the first floor, they've expanded something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of, I think it's like the back room next to the DJ bar that used to be for employees only. I don't know. We will find out.
Yeah, we will find out, Sydney. I'll do some boots on the ground journalism, and maybe even this weekend I'll venture over.
Sydney, do you have a place in New York City as well? Or is Michigan your main, where you hang your hat these days?
I have an apartment in New York City.
Okay.
That's right in the thick of it in Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, wait, that's where I live. I've never seen you in the neighborhood. I've been here 4 years.
It is crazy. You know, and like, one of my favorite things is going for walks in the neighborhood. Like, I go out and like get tacos at Planet Taco, and then I'll like, you know, stop by Verse for a drink, and then go up to Style on J and buy an outfit for the Andy Cohen show. And then, I mean, just like very neighborhood, you know, walking around and checking in. Because
yeah,
since COVID and all of those outdoor places, it feels like the French Quarter in New Orleans. I mean, it's just like being on the street is its own scene.
Yeah, it really is. Wait, you know, on 47th and 9th, that place that was called Bodega?
Yes.
It was painted yellow. They just closed right before the holidays.
Opening there is UT47 Cafe, the like major version. I don't know if you've ever been to UT on 47th.
I've walked by it many a time, but I've never stepped in. Do you love it?
Nice to eat in the neighborhood. The food is really amazing. Korean American fusion menu. There's like a ton of vegan choices. You can get everything non-dairy, which is big for me. And the coffee is untouchable. Really, the best part about it is it's about to be 24 hours up in there.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. So we will finally have a place again, because it used to be Galaxy on the corner of 46th before COVID. That was our 24-hour diner. You know, we used to have like four or five of them on Ninth
Yeah.
Avenue, but they all started like going away. UT is planning on making it a 24-hour spot again. So we'll have a good place to go after a late night at Hotch.
Oh my gosh, I love it. All right, I'll take your endorsement for it. I'm excited now. I loved Bodega, so I'm still pouring one out for it, but I'm glad to hear that UT Kitchen's gonna be great. Have you always been in Hell's Kitchen since you moved to the city?
Almost always. I had a minor stint in Chelsea, and I had a minor stint in Rosedale Park, New Jersey.
Oh.
Yeah, Hell's Kitchen for me, obviously, was always the place what's going to make my life easiest. And obviously, that goes for shows. You know, I want to be able, because my place is basically across the street from Hamilton. So I would walk in the stage door with like a, you know, a cup of coffee in a mug, and people would look at me with like hate in their eyes and say, "Is that from your house?" And it is really about the audition life, like being in that neighborhood, to go to calls, to be able on a day when you have three to go home and change, versus like bringing a bunch of changes of clothes with you and having to change in bathrooms and like get ready. It's just really, for me, made the difference sometimes between booking and, you know, having a frazzled experience in the room. So it's the place for me, Hell's Kitchen.
Oh yeah, it really is amazing. Wait, I'm suddenly realizing like we kind of jumped right into your life there and everything in New York, but I'm really curious about the journey that sort of led you there. So I do kind of want to go back to maybe the beginnings. You mentioned that you had some stage fright. Do you feel like you have a Ring of Keys moment that was that moment that made you realize you wanted to pursue this life of show business, if it was a performance or a movie or something like that? Because you grew up in Michigan, right?
Did. I was born in Detroit. My Ring of Keys moment is gonna have to be, I don't know if I was three or four, but it was watching Singing in the Rain on public TV, whatever station it was on. You know, when, well, I'm not gonna date myself by telling how many. Let's not go there. But I watched Singing in the Rain on television as a very young child, and I still have the images in my mind. I have a photographic memory, so there are certain things that will always just stay in my mind, and I can see them as if they were happening now. And that's one of them. It's just this Technicolor scape and world that Gene Kelly inhabited with so much joy and like panache and energy. It was like, where is this? How do I do this? And I immediately, I watched that movie. The next day that it rained, I went and grabbed an umbrella from the closet. And we were only in that house until I was five. So it had to be like around four or five. And I was like, "Mama," she's like, "Where do you think you're going?" I'm like, "I'm going out to sing and dance in the rain. Like, I have an umbrella. It's, you know, it's fine." And she absolutely did not let me do that. But, and then I guess I'd say, the other moment, the other Ring of Keys moment for me as a young person was a time when I first got turned on to Mariah Carey. And I had not really seen anyone in the entertainment scape that I felt looked like me and kind of spoke to or shared like experiences that I had sort of had in the world as a person of mixed race. And it made me believe that it was, in fact, a viable path for me to be in entertainment and as a singer out in the world. So I would say those are the kind of two early things.
Those are
Yeah.
both amazing reference points and so different too in many ways.
Yeah. Mariah Carey. I mean, I want to see that duet.
I know. What's your favorite Mariah Carey album?
Oof. I mean, God, that's hard now. I would say it's probably still going to have to be Vision of Love. There's just so many songs that mean so much to me from over time. Emancipation was just incredible as a reinvention and as a she wouldn't call it this, but a comeback, if you will. And and also as an introduction for so many people who really didn't know her as a pop star, but more as sort of like an American fixture. And then, of course, in the late most recent years, I have become addicted to her Christmas albums and even her second one more than the first, because I was trying to brush up before I went to the tour.
Oh, you
And
did go?
we hadn't heard much of Merry Christmas to You. And
Great title, great title.
I bumped that in the car starting in October. I just love some of the vocals on it. Not all, not some. I love all of the vocals on it. And during that season, I can't get enough of it. So those are my picks.
I love it.
Love.
Wait, yeah, I was going to ask if you got the chance to see her live. Have you just seen the Christmas tour, or have you ever been able to see her?
I have only seen the Christmas tour. I did not grow up as a person who even thought to go see artists. It just, we would never have been able to afford that and just never even popped into my mind. And I was a very shy kind of kid anyway. So the idea of going into like a huge concert venue and being part of that never like kind of figured to me. I was like always trying to sing alone where no one could possibly hear me.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get some good work done. I still love it.
Did you then find your people with theater? Like what eventually led you to wanting to start participating in that?
I will say, so my stage fright and, kind of fear of standing out really early on, even though I took piano lessons and did musical things in private, even if I tried to like play a piano piece at a recital, I would have these incredible nerves of, so it wasn't just about singing or being up there. It was about kind of anything, public speaking as well. But then I was in middle school and you have to take choir. And, I didn't try and stand out or anything. I just, took it. But then as we moved into ninth grade, from eighth to ninth, one of the boys in the choir, who was a friend of mine, became the first entering freshman at the high school we were going into to ever be accepted into the honors choir. Madrigals, they were called. And I
Ooh.
was sort of this competitive aspect in me really kicked in. And I was like, wait, now I know I can sing better. Because I was competitive academically in school, completing the work and getting great grades on it was a realm in which like I didn't have a shy thing unless she tried to like pull my paper up and talk about me in front of the class. And then I'm like, no. So I, on the first day of high school, and I had enrolled in regular choir, I went after I waited until after, and I went to the teacher and I said, hey, so I want to audition for the honors choir of the Madrigals. And she was like, okay, well, let's hear a little bit of your singing. And all she literally did was say, sing this tone and play a note on the piano. And then I did. And then she looked at me. And then she chose another random one. And I sang that. And she chose a different random one. And I sang that. And she said, you're in. I'll take you to the counselors to have them change your schedule. And in a way, I guess that was my first audition. And that's what got me around like singers and musicians for the first time. And so I from that point, by those teachers and like their friends, like the teacher who did drama was friends with the teacher who did the vocal music. They pulled me into the fall play, into the spring musical, Dreamgirls. And I had always played instruments, along the way. I had been in orchestra and, had a piano education. And after that year, I then auditioned for Interlochen Arts Academy. And then I was really in the thick of like, and I would say that was what I would consider, the real first step towards like being a professional in there. In fact, my first professional dance tour was while I was still in school with Interlochen.
I've heard that Interlochen is like so pivotal for a lot of folks, and it was like a foundational experience for many people. Do you know Al Silber? I know that she
My
did
sister, Al
Interlochen.
Silber. I mean, do I know her? We have done two concerts at Interlochen up here with each other. I really, really love Al. And yeah, and I would agree. It's pivotal in the same way that, like, for any fledgling wizard, getting accepted to Hogwarts is pivotal. It's a place where you can go and be you with no distractions about the like very anxiety inducing like atmosphere of public school and the popularity contests. And if you're in any way different, it's generally not a good thing. And so, you know, Interlochen saved me in so many ways besides the art education. It really, that's where it felt like if you're gonna, you know, if we're gonna talk about my people, I really actually felt like, oh, this is what they mean when they're like, oh, you found your people, like the weirdos, and you know, to use that term with love. And Interlochen provided that space from a faculty level all the way down to, you know, the people who worked at the, you know, food services.
Yeah. Did you ultimately pursue theater for college education as well?
I was really interested in continuing my dance education and, you know, performance, but I realized that, and I'm not trying to limit anybody. I realized that for ballet, I just wasn't born with the facility that I needed to be the best, to be the top, to be the principal out there.
You know, I just watched Center Stage for the first time, so I totally understand what you're saying here, Sydney.
Documentary style. Yes. No, for it's like I looked at my feet, I tried to stretch them, I tried to get them to point. It just, and I knew from just being in classes, the people that got the attention were the people who had the natural facility. I was an amazing partner. I was very strong. I could jump very high and I was a good turner. But you really need like a lot of other things to compete with the best of the best. And so by, you know, elimination, I kind of felt like, well, musical theater. I had done on the way to Interlochen, I had done a summer program at Interlochen, run by the University of Michigan. And I had it, there was a I had done a voice program there and I had done a musical theater program there. And I had had a lot of fun doing that. And while I had not really, I mean, I had done Dreamgirls in school and for, you know, 1 year. Prior to that, I was just not a musical theater kid, except for the fact that I knew every single existing MGM movie musical, right? So I auditioned for University of Michigan and got accepted. And that seemed like where I should go. I mean, I'm from Michigan. My mom still lived downstate. And so, and I liked the campus. And I, you know, had a thing for Gene Kelly and Bob Fosse and those artists. And I was like, I can see myself doing this. And I can see myself like rising to the top. So I did. That's when I first got my dose of like a real theater program. And with 2 years of a dose of that, I dropped out. And it's like, this is not for me. I mean, not theater. The program there at the time, they, you know, I've made my career on experimental theater, on developmental theater, and doing stuff that's outside the box. That's not really, that wasn't really the focus there. It was traditional musicals. And where do you put some guy who doesn't like fit into any racial boxes at the time? You put him in the ensemble. Oh, he can be a shark. And I just felt like I was getting more professional experience back in my Interlochen days. And I felt that I could, what I wanted to do was know, get an answer about like, am I really just, you know, am I not who I think I am? Let me go to New York. I'll give it a year. If I don't book a Broadway show in a year, I'm coming back and finishing my degree because I had gotten a full academic scholarship. So I went to New York and I never came back.
Oh my God. So wait, did you book a Broadway show within that year?
I did.
You did.
And I was firm about that. I was like, if I don't book a musical, I'm going in. But I noticed right away, as soon as like, because before I left, I was like, you know, well, after, I mean, I left technically, but before I went to New York, I was like, so step one, get your equity card. So I did some summer stock and did the summer stock auditions, and I could tell right away that I was always making final cuts. I was always getting to the end of these auditions. And part of my, what I felt like was my like secret trick was I'd go in as a dancer and then we'd get to the singing portion. And then I'd be like, so now listen to this. And, you know, and I felt like that worked at a time, you know, in my career where I needed to like be surprising. I think my height as a dancer helped back then to kind of, you know, help me be seen. I noticed, you know, sort of right away, and I got my equity card doing Victor Victoria, mind you.
Ooh.
And then I started coming to New York and hitting every single open call that you could go to for whatever it was. And it paid off.
And what was that Broadway show that you made your debut in?
It was Bells Are Ringing, the revival with Mark Kudisch and Faith Prince. Oh my God.
Ooh.
Child. For those of you doing your math, stop.
You mentioned that you sort of built your career doing more experimental and original theater, and looking at your resume, like it's certainly been in like original works until Cats. I mean, I feel like Cats, the Jellicle Ball was the first maybe like type revival, maybe other than Bells Ringing, that we've seen you play a principal role in.
Yes, but I don't necessarily consider that not to be developmental and experimental theater. It very much felt like the same process of building something new. And there's like so many countless things that are not on my resume that I, you know, did that was experimental. An amazing one called The Nine Fathers of Ariel, written by Michael John Lacuza and directed by Graciela Danielle. Incredible. But for one reason or another, a lot of these things end up falling by the wayside. I'd done one called Cleopatra that was a story of the last night at Cleopatra's palace, where Mark Anthony comes back in and they think that he's won the war and he has not. He has actually lost. And guess what? They're on their way to like sack the city and take everything. And it kind of actually felt like me, to me, in retrospect, a pre-Jellicle Ball experience. So for me, Jellicle Ball did feel like it was so experimental also because we threw everything out. We didn't use like any idea from the original. And we decided in the room what each number was and what it was going to be. I mean, we would sit down like in a circle and before each number, you know, and talk about like what are the themes of this category? What are the themes of body? What are the themes of realness? What are the themes of Virgin Vogue? And, you know, talk about the experiences that we bring or don't bring to it, you know, and maybe our place in ballroom. And then how does this all play out in the story that we're telling of the evening? And what are our relationships with each other? You know, in modern Shakespeare productions, unless you're doing the very thee and thou, like, you know, and like with 14th, 15th century costumes, a lot of modern Shakespeare is performed in a different context, is performed in like the context of military, the context of business, or something, the business world. And so this felt like that to me too, where you mine the text for meaning and then apply it to the environment in which you have placed your story. And so for me, it actually has all of the hallmarks of really great experimental theater.
And it was just phenomenal. You know, we release episodes weekly on this show, and I can't even tell you how many different artists we had on our show who were wanted to talk with us about the Jellicle Ball. I mean, Sydney, it was so amazing. I mean, I can't think of another theatrical experience I had where there was that much energy coming from the audience. Everyone was just living. Yeah. Was it like that every single night where everyone was like lit on fire, just cheering through the entire show?
Our first preview, you know, we came out and during rehearsals, we would do the opening number, right? And you get to the point where like we all jump up on stage and we're now just kind of going crazy, like, you know, and literally just improvising, going crazy, dancing. And then we go, Jellicle, summer, Jellicle, cat. And we all stop. In the rehearsals and in the like, you know, dress runs, there was silence. And then we wait a second, and then there's a man with her, right? But what we could never have expected was this absolute, like, tidal wave of screaming that happened after we did that Jellicle, Sanford Jellicle cat. I've never experienced anything like it in my career. Like, and it went on and on and on. They weren't going to let us continue until we emotional thinking about it, like that much love coming from an audience, the, you know, first one that's not, don't expect that that's going to happen every night. And it happened every night. It only got more. And especially as people became familiar with the show and what was coming, and they had their fans and they were clacking them together. And, you know, it came a Rocky Horror Experience where they're screaming things out. And that is absolutely part of the show. And so, yeah, it could be overwhelming at times in a good way to have that much love and energy. And we all talk about, this like syndrome that the audience has after the show where their hands are sore from clapping and they're hoarse from screaming and their faces hurt from smiling. And afterwards, you have so much energy, you are like, I have to go out.
I'm even smiling right now just thinking about my experience. It was truly beyond.
I'm so sad I didn't get the chance to see it, but fingers crossed, there'll be more life for it in some capacity.
I know. I'm sure you hear all the rumbling and the rumors too. What's your dream for what happens next with the Jellicle Ball?
Well, I mean, obviously that it transfers to Broadway and, you know, keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Watch this face.
That's my dream too, Sydney. I want to see it so badly. And Connor was not mincing any words when he was saying that everyone, it was their dose of drama. It was what they wanted to just talk about anytime they came on the show.
I have a feeling you will get your chance to see it.
Thank you.
If you're worried that you missed it, I wouldn't put too much energy into that. I would start planning your outfits. I'm just saying that we all hope, you know, that it moves and soon. And also my dreams of it also are to play the Rum Tum Tugger in the West End. My dreams of it are to tour the world and be a part of taking the message of this show to all of the communities around the globe that can use it and need it the most. Because one of the things about this show that felt, you know, a lot of times as an artist, you're like, am I just doing this because I'm obsessed with myself? Am I just, you know, is theater just this, you know, are they right about like actors all being about like, you know, addicted to applause and whatever? And they are. No, I'm kidding. But to see the reaction that the community, the larger LGBTQIA plus 2S community, I can't overstate enough how important it was for them. Representation is everything. Like Mariah Carey, for me, it makes you feel seen. It makes you feel like you have opportunities out there that you didn't know that they existed.
You know, you mentioned that there was such an energy around it and that you never experienced something like it before, but I can imagine it was a different excitement and pandemonium around being in Hamilton when it was, I mean, the hottest sensation, not only in New York, but I mean, I feel like it was a global phenomenon.
Oh, most definitely. And I do in some ways feel that my experience in Hamilton prepared me for my experience in Cats, of the sort of like zeitgeist, like J-Lo's coming tonight, Melissa McCarthy's out there tonight, like she wants to meet you, et cetera. I would say the difference was that I've never in a show. So in Hamilton, they'll go crazy at the end of the song, maybe, depending on how you've set the transitions up, right? They'll go crazy at the end of the song or right before intermission. End of room where it happens, very satisfying moment.
Oh yeah.
Like, boom, in the down pin spot, pointing at the floor. Ooh.
I mean, it hits every time.
Table jump with the mirror underneath. Ow. But and then you also have things like Rocky Horror, for those of you who've done it or experienced it, where there's this idea like the audience is really involved. They're part of it and they're gonna say their things and are going to get laughs that you don't know that are coming and that kind of thing. And so it's kind of those two things mixed together. I don't think anything could possibly prepare you as an actor for being in a show like Cats the Jellicle Ball, except for being Beyonce in the Renaissance tour. Like, to know that they're going to scream. I'm not trying to say applaud. I'm not trying to say they stand up and they really love it. I mean, they're going crazy and you don't know when they're going to stop, and you're not going to stop them until they're ready, kind of, you know, moment. And you never know when it's going to be. I just, while Hamilton was big in its way, and broke some barriers in its way, Cats broke new ones. I mean, even the announcement from Junior LaBeija at the beginning of the show gives you the permission for all my traditional theater kitties who are used to holding your reactions in. This is a ball, darling. Pause. Audience goes crazy. So we encourage you to clap, cheer, and get your life. And the audience goes crazy. And then the show starts. And I think that's very important. One, because that is ball culture, that you scream for the people that you love to support them during their performance and to drown out the screams of the other houses, right? And this idea that theater is community. Theater is an alive, participatory event as much as a football game, where everyone's screaming for their favorite and their team and going crazy. And I don't know that that's been seen before in musical theater.
I went to go see Jellicle Ball by myself, and the people next to me were talking to me, including me in their being gagged, clapping. Oh my God. Like, you know, looking for my reaction. It was unlike anything I've ever seen.
It was this community thing. And like, I had friends come and who afterwards would show up, you know, to talk to me after the show with, oh, and these are my new friends, such and such. We met during the show and, you know, oh, and they wanted to meet you, and et cetera. That happened so many times where there's this feeling of safety, of goodwill, of I'm with my people for real in this moment. I can tell by how they're dressed. I can tell by the line that that person shouted out. And I want to talk to them. It was an event that I think edifying for people outside of the LGBTQ community to see the love and the joy and the welcome and how we party, like what that's about. It's not keg stands and like, you know, an angry fight at the end of the night. It's joy and like execution and, you know, fierce frolicking.
How did it feel to you to get to go out there as an openly gay man playing Rum Tum Tugger, you know, giving the realness, showing your body, getting to be, to embody this character on stage for audiences?
I learned a lot, I think, about some of the whys of myself. I kind of, you know, start going out because I had never been exposed in Michigan to a place that had a gay kind of thriving culture. And I was really desperate for that. And I loved to dance. So the heyday of these clubs like the Roxy and Limelight, again, I was like 7 years old, but it was fun. I looked older. And Milo and Sound Factory, it was like an adventure. Like every time, it wasn't just like a night out. It wasn't just about going to meet people. It was like this fun, what am I going to see tonight? Is Kevin Aviance going to like get up on stage randomly and turn it? Like, what's going to happen? And so that's where I actually first started learning tubo at 2 a.m. at 2:30 when the dancers came out to play. And I would pick up moves from them. They would teach me. I mean, I have a lasting friendship from my early club days with so many people, but specifically Ren Extravaganza, who taught me my first voguing and who I brought to the Jellicle Ball all these years later, you know, like for it to be such a moving moment for him. And so what I realized, especially with the Rum Tum Tugger and his category being realness, and them telling me, you know, throughout, as I'm approaching it, with my musical theater mind of like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have this trick and I'll pull this out of my pocket and I'm going to do this. I'm going to slide across the floor and, you know, and I got to come out and I got to be sexy and I got to be, you know, flashy and I got to. And they were like, do less. You're already the Rum Tum Tugger. You're already him. So you actually just kind of need to relax into that. And I didn't understand what they were telling me at first because I felt like I was going to go out there and do nothing then. Is that what you're telling me? Like to go out there and do nothing? I mean, and I've watched all these portrayals of, cats in my study. And I'm just like, and Rum Tum Tugger's constantly like licking his lips and grinding his hips and doing all this stuff. And I'm going to go out there and do nothing. And as we examined what realness is in the community, I realized that even though I wasn't in ballroom, I had been walking realness since I first realized I was gay and that that was not a desirable thing in public. Some of the ways in which I behave. In middle school, I had like other boys, they'd say, "Hey, what's up?" And I would, wave at them and they would be like, "So never wave like that again." And acutely aware that I grew up with a lisp and it was very pronounced. And, acutely avoiding figuring out how am I going to say these words right? How do I get rid of this thing so that I can pass, so that I cannot be the target of this stuff in the school hallways, so that I can walk down the street in New York City late at night and not feel like anybody's going to pick me as a target. In life, even, on the subway or wherever, I didn't realize that, the implications of what I was doing, or that I was teaching myself this thing called realness, or that I was booking because of my realness. I have always felt very, very gay. I really have. And I would notice along the way, like going to auditions for some things, right? Audition for a gay character. And I'd go in there and I would like think I was being like a gay character. And they'd be like, "Okay, so that was great. But could you really try and like clean it up?" I'm like, okay. And I thought I was. So I'd like push further and they'd be like, like really gay. And I couldn't book those parts at the time, and partly because of the way, this avatar looks in life, but also of just all of the ways in which I had trained myself and kind of to become this persona that I am. I mean, there's so much of it that's natural about me, but then so many of the things that were quote unquote inherently not masculine that I think heterosexual men also have growing up that are trained out of them, like the way that every frat boy talks in a vocal fry, because to speak in like the regular voice would not sound as masculine.
That was a little too good, by the way. Anyway.
I am in Northern Michigan, so but going out there, I didn't know how they were going to react at all. As one doesn't before you have audiences. And again, total and utter shock for me as a performer almost threw me completely off my game when I would part that, when they would say, "And the next chord category is realness." And immediately the Rum Tum Tugger theme starts playing, and I part those curtains and come out and stand there in the sunglasses and just, very casually just stand there. The last thing I was expecting was screaming like Usher had just stepped through. I thought, oh, maybe over time, maybe after like awards season. I never could have expected that. It's an amazing feeling as a performer, as a gay performer out there doing a gay role, to get that kind of reception for just stepping out. And it gave me so much confidence in what I have to offer in the industry, and what I have to offer as a type unto myself, as a man who's mixed race and raised by a white woman. I mean, the question I get asked the most in life is, "Where are you from?" And then I know what they mean, and they don't mean me saying I'm from Michigan. And so then we go through the whole dance of, well, I mean, are you Latino? Are you Iranian? Are you, black? Are you, what's going on here? Brazilian, the list goes on. Every place that they have brown people has claimed me as their own. So it finally felt like, oh, I'm not going to audition for the black role and then be given the Latino understudy a part as well. Playing the Rum Tum Tugger did so much for me as a person and as an actor. And then, of course, you know, getting to strip down to nothing, no spoilers, and show your whole body in a way that isn't often seen on the Broadway stage had its own sort of, you know, like body dysmorphic anxiety that goes along with it, just of like, well, it's got to be perfection. It has to be the best for me, if not for anybody else. It's got to meet my standard of whatever these Getty images are about to be out on the internet forever. You know, I've played Rocky in Rocky Horror in the past and realized those pictures stick around. They will always be there. And, you know, little did I know that my moment is a bit of a surprise because they kind of hold back on that. So you'll just have to wait and you'll have to come and see the Broadway show, kids. You'll have to see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that. That's a little bit of a spoiler alert, a little tease there, because I knew nothing about
Well,
that
you don't
myself.
know until you've seen me do it. Yeah, I do go in. I'm not shy about it. That's you can't be. But that really, it changed my life in a way where like I got real serious way in advance, you know, about my body even since the workshop of Cats, knowing that like I had to take, oh, I had to disrobe quite a bit in the workshop production, and I was like, oh God, I need to go to the gym. And so that's what I did 6 days a week for, you know, 9 months leading up to the show.
Now, Sydney, can you tell us, are you in the gym 6 days a week now preparing for anything? Is there, any reason you'd be on the same routine?
Well, yes, of course I am in the gym 6 days a week now because, you know, for anything that might potentially happen in the future, I don't want to be caught flat-footed. And as we talked about earlier, you know, my ballet feet can't be flat. So yeah, it's 2 leg days a week, and then all of the other body parts on the other 4 days. And I try and give myself 1 day of rest and constant stretching. It's a lot of eating. That's the thing. It's like when I started getting ready for this part. And I have a best friend who's a trainer, and he was getting me ready. He had a meal plan for me, way more food than I normally eat. Like it, a lot of times, still now, too late because I'll never be able to eat that amount of food before bedtime. Because it turns out, if you eat more, then your body thinks it's in an abundance of food, and it turns your metabolism up, especially when you're working out, you know, with, you know, regularity. And so it starts burning everything because it thinks, oh, there's always so much food coming. And so as long as I keep it clean, and I do, I kind of just love basics, you know, meat and potatoes and carbs, rice. It's a lot of carbs, a lot. It's all foods I love. It's just the discipline of really eating it. And so yeah, I do still, I don't know that I'll ever stop loving on my body. So many wonderful things have come out of what this preparation I've done for the role, and I've just never felt, I guess, healthier in my life. And when I stop working out, then my body starts to hurt, and that's mostly because I will stretch in between like exercises, and so I do a lot of mobility. And I think that's kind of one of the number one things that people, as they grow older in life, kind of forget to do is just the mobility of stretching your hips, stretching your quads, rolling your shoulders out, like hanging from a bar and just letting that happen. That is like the secret to, like, I think, eternal youth.
Oh my God. Well, you heard it here first. I love that. I thank you so much for sharing all that and just, being who you are. It's honestly very inspiring, and it's been so interesting hearing about your process. Now, we do have to say goodbye soon, but before we do so, we'd like to end on a dose of drama. As Connor mentioned, a lot of people said it was Cat's Angelica Ball over the last year, but this could be whatever you're loving right now, whatever you have on your mind. Could be a book, could be music, movie, anything you might have seen you want to recommend or rant about. Connor and I will also share, and I'll go first. Sydney, you were talking about this
heyday of New York clubs and whatnot. And it's so ironic you mentioned this because I've gone back. Connor got me for Christmas RuPaul's first ever book, which was called Letting It All Hang Out. It came out in like 1996. And if for those who read The House of Hidden Meanings that came out last year, this it all gets expanded upon. But Rue has always been Rue. It is so interesting and fascinating that in the 90s this memoir came out. I highly recommend it to anybody who can find it. I don't think it's in print anymore, so you have to find like an old copy somewhere at like a secondhand shop, but really, really recommend it. It's like a about a it captures a moment in time in New York culture too. It's really cool, especially gay culture. So I recommend that. Connor, do you have a dose of drama?
I've got to read it. I loved House of Hidden Meanings. And so I definitely need to read the first one. I do. Oh my God, this is so random of me. My dose of drama. I'm obsessed with Billie Eilish right now. Like years after everybody already knew how amazing she was, like obviously love, her Oscar nominated and winning songs. I've loved her hit singles, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm diving into the discography now, and she might be one of the best we have. Let's be honest.
Wow. Wow.
Really is so inventive, and she's experimental, and she's not afraid to just push it. And her album from last year, Hit Me Hard and Soft, from start to finish, from top to bottom, incredible,
No skips.
incredible. No skips. And it sonically just moves so seamlessly.
Wow.
I urge everyone to really, dive into Billie's, especially Hit Me Hard and Soft, but her entire career is just fantastic. So I know, isn't that kind of random of me that I'm
It is
suddenly
so
into
random.
Billie? I know. Oh my God. Anyway, Sydney, do you have a dose of drama to send us home with?
I do. So for me, if we're talking albums, there's an artist named Yebba. She has an album named Dawn. It's her only album. She has a multitude of singles. People have probably heard one or two of them here. It's one of the just most astonishing vocal performances I've heard on an album. I've dove so deep into it. I've never heard, in especially the recent past, a woman who can riff and across genre, so many notes. I'm just like, how did she think of this? And in learning all of the songs, it absolutely has made me a better singer and a better artist listening to it. She's just really, really deep, coming from a place of tragedy. And so I couldn't recommend her more for all of my audiophiles out there. Her name's Yeva, and the album's called Dawn. And if I can tack another one on,
Oh,
I
yeah.
just watched on Netflix a animated feature called Nimona, and it shocked me. I thought it was just gonna be another like I thought it was just gonna be another like kind of animated, like well done computer animated thing that, is fun and, visually has some nice effects. It actually kind of shocked and surprised me at every turn. I thought I was going to be seeing this heteronormative kind of romp, and it is absolutely not that. You kind of can't believe the representation you're seeing in the film. I just watched it a few days ago, and it's stunning on that level. Stunning. If only it were a musical, it's the only way it could be better.
I think I saw the trailer for it. It's like a wrongfully accused
Yeah, the
knight
trailer,
or something
it's
like
funny.
that.
The trailer is very secretive. It doesn't let you into any of what's about to happen, of who is who and like what they represent. And I kind of like that, although it did keep me from watching it at first. I was like, oh, this is, I'll put it on
Okay.
my watch list. And then I got bored one day and turned it on, and I was like, how in on earth has this not been talked about? It's almost shocking that they even let it happen in a cartoon.
Oh,
And then
wow.
there's always RuPaul's Drag Race, which I'm
Yes.
watching some iteration of some season, be it, the American version, be it the very excellent Canadian version that's happening right now, or, Michelle Visage down in Australia with those Australian queens. And to wrap it up and bring it back to Jellicoe Ball, Michelle Visage was our guest judge because she was in town as the Grand Marshal of the Pride Parade. And I've never heard an audience go wilder for a judge that was announced. They went crazy. And those are my doses of drama.
Oh my God, you've given us so much. Michelle, of course, has ballroom background too, so she was an appropriate judge and for multiple
I
reasons.
love that you know that. Michelle is like an astonishing old way. performer, and she does Vogue Femme, and the videos are out there. She puts them out there of her and Willie Ninja at the club, at the Copa, like turning it. It was, yeah, she, for me, she really is everything. She personifies iconic New York and also the rise of the willful, the rise and the kind of people we need to see out there. So,
oh yeah.
She's real young.
Oh my God.
She's real for real for real. So,
oh, I'm obsessed with that. We love her. Love Michelle.
Oh, yeah. Is our queen. Yes.
The rise of the willful. Oh my God, that gave me a little chill, Sydney. Well, listen, thank you so much for doing the podcast. It's been amazing to get to know you and hear about your story. And I'm getting hyped for Jellicle Ball again, but also just your amazing career. We didn't even get to dive into your voiceover work and TV work and stuff. So we'll just have to have you on again one day.
Yeah.
And chat more.
Sometime in June or July.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Pencil you in for no reason in particular.
A little Pride reunion. And of course, you're on Instagram just at Sydney Harcourt, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. Everyone should follow you along there for all updates. They should also follow us. We're at The Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. Thank you again, Sydney. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.